It's easy to give money out. It's difficult to collect it back. So there is always demand. In fact, every day we have hundreds or thousands of people applying for loans every single day, but we have to decline more than 99% of them. And loan is not, again, supposed to be for starting a business, right? There's supposed to be a cash flow. If you look at a lot of the history of the banks that have gone down, there's also been a lot of insider loans. I don't want to mention names, but some of those things tank the banks. When a bank engages in that and then goes down, let's not blame it on the Nigerian businesses and say they didn't pay. For a bank with 200, 300 branches, 1,000 staff, shareholders asking for dividend every year, bank owner that has to fly jets, borrowing money is very expensive. So what that means is that everybody will look at what's base lending rates that I get from CBN. I'll start from there. So most banks now are doing 30 to 35%. So the first year, we're really in my living room. And it's funny because at the time we started that business, three of us were already experienced professionals, right? I'd already worked in all these places at the time. Onye had worked in Page and Red Money. Mawa had worked in CBN and Leadway. But we still took that very frugal approach. We didn't buy any laptop. We didn't rent any office. Another mistake some people have made is sort of expecting that subsequent funding rounds will keep happening. I spend more of my time chasing customers than chasing investors. Because if you're chasing investors, a full-time job, you can't do much again. Like you're toasting. You have to think about accounting in terms of payables and receivables. So what do I mean? If you have payable is money that you're supposed to pay to somebody. Receivable is money that you're expecting. Now, for your payables, if you are doing very good, like working capital management, the idea for you is you hold on to it for as long as you can so that you can make money on it. So let me give you an example. If I want you to supply this book, even if the money is ready today, rather than give you that money, why don't I keep that money in a bank that will be giving me 12 or 15%? So I would always encourage anybody in business, no matter how little, just more, go and learn accounting and finance. Just enough to have a collaboration. Business, relationship is everything. A lot of stocks have actually had peaks and valleys, right? You don't want to be the guy that is going to always buy the deep and stay in the deep. So what I would always say is do your research, look at the history. You notice that when Otedola buys a stock, they typically like shortlisted to top 25. Now, top 25 went for a 1 week boot camp again of another round of sessions, classes, more pitching. Top 25 were shortlisted to top 10, and then top 10, you know, we had pitch at. And to be honest, like I mentioned, I didn't know anybody at NSI.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're very much welcome to the Frankly Business Podcast. You know how we do it here. We bring you top conversations around the business world, the business landscape. As a matter of fact, just a few minutes before coming on the podcast, I was having a conversation with the guest you're going to see today. So let me keep that in the cooler. But then he was saying that, Frank, I love what you're doing. Thank you for doing the Frankly Business Podcast, because some of the conversations we see that polarize the Nigerian, the African media space, are conversations around they collect my babe, they don't collect my babe. You bum for me, baby mama, this one, twerk, that. You know, conversations around entertainment. Hey, come on, you know what I'm talking about. But these conversations are for people like you who love value-oriented conversations. You want to know the data, you want to know how to position for the next market boom. Or you want to know perhaps what is happening around different industry. This is the podcast for you. This is where we have these conversations. And you know, we bring you people who have their skin in the game and who have been there and they've done that. Not be moi moi. We're not going to bring you a person where they sell moi moi to come know how to perhaps sell shawarma. Obviously, you need to learn from someone who understands what it is you, what is it, what your pain point is. And that way you'll be able to level up in the game of business. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to talk any. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to say too much. They say picture speaks the loudest noise, or it speaks more volumes than anything you say. So let me show you something. Here you go. This is it. Economics with Uncle Tunde. And now let's go to the author. That is who we have sitting on our famous couch. And he's the founder of Sycamore. Now, Sycamore, you heard a noise. Let me show you what sounded. This is it. You know what we do here. We arrange the world of business. So, Babatunde Akinmoses is also known as Uncle Tunde. He's the CEO of Sycamore. I'm sure you must have seen that brand across the length and breadth. Billboards, walkways. You must have seen that. A fintech platform powering African businesses. But here is it. Prior to running Sycamore, so you know, just before you think of that idea and you just jump out of your bed and feel that, okay, yes, is the next best thing since sliced bread, and I need to come out and start implementing. Sometimes you need to go practice and understand how it is to run that business. And so he's been able to put himself in the game. He's proud to Sycamore. He worked with PwC, KPMG, and where he provided professional services with various companies in and around West Africa. So basically, you know what that means? He's been able to understand the blueprint and the pain points of businesses across West Africa. And that's why you see him positioning for that particular market. He also worked at the petroleum industry giant Shell. And had a brief stint working at Kenyan-based startup Pezesha. Babatunde holds an MBA from the Lagos Business School and IESE in Spain. He's a first-class chartered banking professional, chartered tax practitioner, and a fellow of the Nigerian Institute of Credit Administration. Had a first class in economics from Bowen University. And the beautiful thing about this is also he won the NSIA fund. Director, please don't cut this. Put it as part of the script because, hey, everybody makes mistakes. So he won the NSIA fund, $100,000. And ladies and gentlemen, to put that in perspective, convert that to Naira, that's over 160 million whopping Naira. Kelechi, what are you going to do with that money?
You won't see me for 2 months, though. No more podcasts. I'll tell you, Frank, come to Maldives, let's shoot. We'll fly our guest, but just kidding. But before you access all those funds, you need to have a business that has been tested, proven. So when you come into the market or when you meet those people giving you the funds, you have something to showcase and also try to get them to buy in. So it's not like you wake up one morning, I have an idea, I'm going to do NSIA fund. They will just bounce you back. And you say, oh, Nigeria happened to me. No, you didn't do your homework. You didn't test the market. You didn't put a product out there for people to buy in. So that's why we brought him on.
Yeah.
And let's come and tell us how you do it.
So as you were talking about it, remember we had a guest, Sam Easy, one of the founders of
Our Pass
Business Bank. And he said something before he started his bank. He used to work with an FMCG, and he was in charge of distribution.
Wow.
And you know, major is like, if you're mentioning the first two FMCGs in this country, he worked with them and he understood how to permeate different markets with products. And so that alone was a major launch pad for him to launch his startup. And so he understood the market, built a product for that market, and it's just easy for him to penetrate. And right now you're seeing there are lots of expansion program that they're having in their startup. So it looks like you followed suit because you've been able to understand the pain points of different businesses in West Africa.
Yeah.
And that is it's just voila. Kelechi, who is our guest for today?
Oh, you have said everything. But I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Sycamore, that's a peculiar name. Where did it come from?
It's from the Bible.
Sorry. I mean, no, but it's spot on, right? It's actually from the Bible because what happened is Sycamore was conceptualized at Lagos Business School. That's where I met my co-founders, by the way. And then we're bouncing off different names. We're trying to get names. And a lot of names we kept coming up with. They were bouncing them at the CAC. And this one has been used before. And then we're supposed to be paying attention in class, but we're chatting on WhatsApp for creating a business. Anyways, and then, you know, somebody said Sycamore. In fact, not even among the three of us, right? One of our friends that invested early in us, even before we started the business, which is, I guess, one of the points that we're talking about, right? Before we even got a name, somebody has already committed to investing with us. And he said, well, why not Sycamore? I said, why Sycamore? Because, like, you know, in the Bible, when Zacchaeus climbed the sycamore tree, you know, that was the only way he could see Jesus. So the sycamore tree was like upliftment. So, you know, the way the sycamore tree uplifted Zacchaeus to see Jesus, that's how we're going to uplift SMEs financially. Really deep. I say, and anytime I share that, I was like, oh my God, deep. I said, well, I mean, it sounded really good. And really, that's what we've been doing. We're really uplifting and empowering SMEs financially the way sycamore tree did for black years.
Yeah, so how do you identify that that was a problem to be solved? Most businesses, once they wake up, they don't go to platforms like yours, they go to banks. An average business guy, if in the streets in Alaba or one of these popular market trade fair, or just have a store somewhere that is doing good numbers.
Yeah.
They don't think about going to, okay, what are other lending platforms I can use and leverage to grow? I want to go to the bank. But how's it been so far with that market and sensitizing them about what you do?
So, you know, interestingly, you started with data. Technically started with a case study. So we're looking at a case study in one of our classes, and there was a case study about a company that was providing finance to businesses in Ghana, I think. And we're not looking at it, and we said, oh, let's even look at the situation in Nigeria. And I went to CBN's portal, right? And what I saw, you know, I found it astonishing. So what happened was, there was an amount that all the banks in Nigeria are lending every year, in trillions, right? And the SMEs were only getting 1% of that amount. It was even there in the breakdown. You see the sector services, oil and gas. Then you go down the line, you see 1% for all the almost 30, 40 million SMEs in Nigeria. And I said, how are these guys, all these guys are supposed to share this small money? And obviously, it became obvious that was a big opportunity, right? So we said, you know what, let's try and solve this problem. Let's be part of the solution. And to be honest, when we even started the market, when we started the marketing rather, it wasn't too difficult to market because people need loans. Mm-hmm. I have one of my mentors, Deji Olowe, will always say that if you drop 10 trillion naira in Nigeria, if you drop in the middle of Lagos, not Nigeria, that it will go out in seconds, right? Because a lot of people need money. I think where you now have the work to do as a company, as a fintech, is who are the people that will return the money back? You know, it's easy to give money out. It's difficult to collect it back. So there is always demand. In fact, every day we have hundreds or thousands of people applying for loans every single day. But we have to decline more than 99% of them.
So are you saying are we going to say that it's the same thing you're doing is what the banks are doing? Because the data you saw, which was 1%,
yes,
the banks are towing the party. You're towing.
So yes and no. So let me give the difference.
Because
difference
doing is that the same thing.
The only reason, that's a different kind of problem, right? Because for the way you are looking at it is you are looking at it from the perspective of the whole of Nigeria. That's one, and then you also have to look at all these businesses. Where would they have gone to before? And not just where would they have gone to. Even the ones that qualified in the banks, right? Or the traditional banks, I'm not say all banks. It would take you, I don't know if anybody has gone in a traditional bank even as a business before. It will take you months. Sure. I'm not even as Sycamore, when we got the line we got from a bank, it took us 9 months to get it. So you are looking at a business that has 3 days to solve a problem, 3 days to get money, but you've not even finished opening your account in those 3 days. So how are you going to get the loan, right? And I was also, so there is that thing about speed, which is a critical factor.
That's right.
And to be honest, we would even want to do it much more. But I think the challenge now is there's only so much we can do on our platform because our platform is actually a peer-to-peer lending platform where we have lenders and we have borrowers. So a big part of our work is also looking for rich people like Frank and Kelechi to come and lend on the platform so that we can do that financial intermediation. So, which is why for fintech lending for businesses, people will say...
Who fintech, shares the risk? You do.
Yeah, I mean, we...
Because the concept of peer-to-peer, asking because it's a general default model.
Yeah.
Where I don't know who is lending me the money.
Yeah.
But there's an escrow.
Yeah.
The escrow is obviously the entity, Sycamore. So who bears the risk?
Yeah. So
both pairs.
Both pairs. So it depends on the model you want.
Okay.
For our platform, we have a part of our product called Loan Friends where you are just lending money directly to Kelechi. You know Kelechi, you can see Kelechi, right? So you determine the rates. You bear the risk of that one. So that's pure peer-to-peer lending, right? Mm-hmm. Where we don't get involved, just charge the commission for the financial intermediation. But if you say, no, you are risk averse, you don't want to bear the risk, you can actually put money in our portfolio, in a portfolio that will manage on your behalf, where we're the ones that will determine the rates, we're the ones that will bear the risk, but you can't charge anything. We're the ones that will determine how much to charge. For the pure peer-to-peer, you can charge Kelechi any amount to you. If you're doing 100% a day, if he agrees, he accepts the contract, that's on both of you, and you know, you guys collect, but we'll facilitate. But you can also have the one where we are just managing your portfolio for you. We agree on your rates. We bear that risk. Yeah.
So, Sarah, let's talk.
Let's talk. Oh, yeah.
When it comes to loan in Nigeria, paying back is hard. I've seen content for days about Pompey and... Sorry for calling that name.
And
how they harass just content for content's sake. I'm not showing
some of those things are jokes. They are jokes and the rest. Some of them.
So paying back loan is quite difficult. Yeah. We don't have a culture of paying back loan. I saw a data about a company that went down.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't recover 90% of their loans.
Yeah.
So you are coming to play in that market. Was it a bother to you that, okay, how do we recover this money? And two, how are you making sure you recover this money?
Yeah. So that's a very good question. And that is why you have to decline a lot of people, right? Because one of the things you are doing in your risk assessment process, you are verifying that this is somebody of good character. So in lending, we do ability and willingness to pay. So ability is, does this person earning money? And loan is not, again, supposed to be for starting a business, right? There's supposed to be a cash flow. So you are checking, okay, this person, can they afford it? Then you're looking at willingness to pay is you're trying to come up with interesting ways to assess the character of that person and see if they have a history of repaying their loans, which is why a lot of the banks don't even lend to businesses because they feel like it's so difficult to collect their money back, right? So a big part of collection is doing your KYC, know your customer process, which is you want to gather as much information as you can about this customer so that if the person is not paying back willingly, then you can now fall back to recovery methods to get your money. Because the truth is that why a lot of the conventional fintech lending companies that do instant loans, they have a limited time span to do very thorough KYC.
Yeah.
So they have not verified addresses. Mm-hmm. There's a limited information that they have. If somebody applies and gets a loan in 5 minutes, there's only so much information you've collected. So if that loan goes bad, even the money, if you give somebody 50K in 3 minutes and the transportation money to go and collect the 50, if it goes bad and the transport money is 20K to call the person 10K credit, it doesn't make sense again, right? So cost of recovery is also a challenge. This is why when we started, we made 100K our minimum amount. And that's because we understand that when we're dealing with businesses a lot, not just individuals, businesses need some relatively substantial amount. So you see that average loan size is like 3 million, 5 million, for instance. So if you have a 5 million loan, you can spend 100K to collect it back. Even if you take a loss, it's not the entire thing. At least you have a substantial part of it. So it's not easy. We knew into it, coming into it, but I guess because, just like you said, we also came from an experience mindset where I've worked with financial institution in consulting capacity. One of my colleagues that worked with a fintech, one of my co-founders when he had worked with a fintech before. So we already had some, okay, these are things we're going to do differently. This is how the space is. But it doesn't mean that you won't have challenges. Even the biggest banks, there's no bank that does credits that doesn't have any issue with recovery at all. It's part of the business. You take risk. So I think what we try to do is make sure that we have enough information as fast as possible so that we can serve the customer well and then we have a way to recover our money. So we use more like a hybrid process of gathering information as opposed to just, you know, disbursing loans in 5 minutes.
So if there's any part of the financial institution, or if there's any segment, I know the commercial banks, they have access to data.
Yeah.
In short, I feel that banking is owned by the government. I'm telling you, that's the history. It's like the cheat code to generational wealth of the 20th and 21st century. Do your research.
Yeah.
It's like, you just sit down. Everybody just be bringing money. It is, bro. Leave grammar, leave all the like you're just sitting down. No, you didn't. Nobody pursued me from house, so I carry my money, go bank, go drop bank. Do you get? I didn't give my mom who gave birth to me, I didn't give my dad. I don't know if you get my point. I didn't give my wife to help me keep it. Why did I do that? Sometimes we need to ask ourselves the questions. Is that we trust them more than people that give birth to us, right? That's one. Number two, where did that trust come from? Most times, we don't think critically. We just feel that, oh, I don't go deposit my money. But what gave you the audacity to deposit the money? I don't know. It's because it's the backing of the government telling you that if anything happens to your money, I would pay you. That's the government in question, which is through the NDIC, meaning your money is insured. Just, it happened with Heritage Bank. Went down the drain. What the government say? But that's to tell you that in context, no go put, if you have more than 5 million, you're on your own. You get. But NDIC said, okay, if you put your money in any bank, we'll insure that money. If anything happens to the bank, this bank is well regulated and all whatnot. We do that. So what I'm saying in essence is, banks have access to all the data.
Yeah.
Commercial banks, and they do. I beg to say that they have more access to data than even the fintechs.
Yeah.
Because they've been dealing with these guys. They know their behavioral pattern of an average Nigerian. Fintech wave just started barely a decade. Less than a decade. The biggest boys like the Paystack and the Flutter wave. And they're not up to, let's say, a decade. They're about. So these guys understand the buying pattern. They have a lot of data. And they're working with the government. And so with that in mind, these guys are saying that they have NPL, which is non-performing loans, of trillions.
Yeah.
Amcon, which is responsible for being the shock absorber of those non-performing loans, cannot recover those loans because they have properties. Yes, they have properties. Okay, liquidate those properties. They can't sell. It's not something you can easily liquidate. If you say, okay, I have a collateral. Yes. Okay, go and sell it. Most times they end up selling it below market price because they are pressed for cash. And that's what ends up, that's why you see some of all these banks tanking. And so with all this, what's the shock absorber you have? You get. You're telling MSMEs to come. Do you have their properties? How many MSMEs have access to properties? So if anything happens to the loan, I'm saying this because investors are asking this question.
Yeah, of course. No, and it's a valid question. So I think that, so first off, I don't think it's a question of... the banks are run by human beings. I think generally human beings will always follow the path of least resistance. So what do I mean? If a bank has a capital base, people have given it deposits of, let's say, $1 trillion for the big banks, you know, now you have options. Somebody has given, you're not paying a lot of interest on the person's money, maybe 1 or 2% a whole year. And you have a myriad of things you can do with that money. T-bills are now over 20%. You can lend to other banks. There's interbank markets. There are bonds, government bonds. So you do interbank lending that the banks are most likely to pay you back. You do treasury bills at 20-something%. You do government bonds for a good spread. The question you ask yourself is it really worth it to give to SMEs? That's the question that a lot of banks will ask. It's not like they can't do it, but it's difficult. I mean, that space, I'm telling you that it's difficult, right? So that's why I started with the point of human beings would just naturally follow the path of least resistance. I don't think it's that they can't do it. I think it's a question of, I have all this money. This is easier for me to do. If you read this guy's book, Living in Tarmac, Ike Boje from founder of Access Bank, right?
Okay. Yo.
Living in Tarmac, that's the name of his book. And he said, look, when they tried to do like a lot of business lending, some Nigerian entrepreneurs disappointed them, right? And you know, because of the size of the kind of loans that they are dealing with, the systemic, where it can affect the bank, it can affect the economy. If few banks have issues, which is why the government won't allow like a Unity Bank to, you know, go down or something like that. So the question you ask is, they are most likely to do things that are easier to them. That's one. Then the other part of it is, that being said, if you look at a lot of the history of the banks that have gone down, I mean, barring political, nuances, there's also been a lot of insider loans where friends of directors.
Now you're talking.
Friends.
Now the podcast just started.
Where family members, chairman, insider loans, true. Right? And again, I don't want to mention names, but if you, some of those things tank the bank. So you can, when a bank engages in that, and then goes down, let's not blame it on the Nigerian businesses and say they didn't pay. The banks gave loans to their friends and their friends didn't pay. And you know, they thought they could manage it, but you know, it just happened.
They used one collateral to access loans so around the world.
So and in fairness, like you say, so that's really it. So you have all these deposits, you can use it for cheaper things, or you can give these people, because again, the amount of effort required to actually give a lot of business, you have to do a lot of education, a bit of hand holding. We have customers that we've even helped them register their business. We've done a lot of financial education. So it's a lot of work. And really, for a bank with 200, 300 branches, 1,000 staff, shareholders asking for dividend every year, bank owner that has to fly jets.
It's
not me that said it. You don't meet Otedola and fight it. So it's a bit of a structural issue from that perspective. So it's not it's just much more difficult for them to do when you consider the alternative, as opposed to, and they didn't really build their business from the ground up for that purpose, some of them, as opposed to the way we designed from day one, that okay, this is what we want to do, and we are trying. It's not so much a fallback plan. Obviously, there are things in place. So, for example, for some businesses, if you assess that your risk is high, we'll ask you to pledge a collateral. It's not property collateral, motor vehicles. So, if you have a car, we ask you to bring the papers, right, and to sign some documents, so that you can continue using your car for your business. Obviously, we won't take a house because we know that a lot of SMEs don't have property.
Apart from that, no house can be bought with 3 million.
No, exactly, no house. So you get it. So depending on the risk assessment, say, okay, this is what can be done. You can pledge this collateral and you can go and do your business. And if all goes well, everything should go fine. If not, you know.
So, what's your interest rate like?
Interest rate is, that's a very good question. So our interest rate is based on, again, it's based on MPR. We start from that and then go up. So what do I mean? So now MPR is 26.75%. So most people that are already lending us money are starting from that base.
Sorry to cut you.
Okay.
I think it's interesting for it to be, good for us to understand this concept, because sometimes... Okay. We're talking to people who are just
right,
who are trying to understand.
We just jumped into it.
just MPR. Some people are, come back here.
Okay,
don't go anywhere. We'll explain it.
Yeah.
So to break it down for people to really understand this concept, because I've noticed something about the financial world.
The jargon.
The financial jargons are much, and it's deliberate.
I read
it somewhere, and this person was like saying that. By the way,
that's why I wrote this. For those, some of those jargons.
This person was saying that evil thrives in darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah, evil thrives in darkness.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
never see a rape case in broad daylight. Hardly. He's always in corner. So what does that mean? People are like, when you use jargons, they are lost.
Mm-hmm.
So they are in the dark. They are deliberately kept in the dark. And so a lot of things will happen. That's where they have the opportunity to make sure a lot of things happen in the financial world.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they can do some laundering and do some kind of things.
Absolutely.
It's deliberate just to make people just people have this apathy towards the financial world because, number one, when you turn on the news, you're hearing Q1, Q2. They're just saying generally the match. They're saying FY. They're just saying the financial year. Yeah, 2024. Why can't you just break it down? They're saying NPR. This guy has left. He has left the channel. Come back here. It's interest rate.
Sorry.
If people understand this thing from primary school, and that's why I love the Chinese. They carry them along from the young age. So now it's easy for them to run a business, understand their numbers, not trying to understand Kini NPR.
But let me break it down to you, Frank. And it's sad to see. I feel a lot of Gen Zs and Gen Alpha will struggle in the modern world when there's not that family coverage with them. They will struggle in the modern world because they are not really in this sector of trying to know things that better them off financially. They are more in the vibes and
Inshallah
space because we are growing up in the same, no shade to the entertainment sector. I ran cinemas for like 2 years, 3 years, so I'm a big lover of the entertainment sector. So they are coming to that space where Nigerian entertainment scene blew up. More money came into marketing, more record labels came in, more money came into film production. So every time they are being sensitized with movies and music. But high quality educative content that helps you know, okay, if NPR is interest rate, what is Nigerian interest rate? So if I borrow now for this my business, I'll pay back in the next 3 years. They are not at the forefront of our social media space. That's why if you see most of the top content creators in Nigeria, they are mostly comedy or entertainment. So I feel they will struggle. And I hope maybe this podcast, when they come to realization, say, Omo, I don't the Odo.
Yeah,
because I talk from experience. I have a junior brother and I know his priorities. If I call him right now, like, yo, where's the interest rate of Nigeria? Was that one?
The funny thing is, so you know, you make a good point, but I think, you know, we also have a responsibility to do things like this, to be the change. I sound like a politician. To be the change that we want to see in terms of like to break these things down, to explain, because you're right, there is a flood of content that has to do with entertainment, comedy, just want to laugh. Say the country's had enough. So when I go to social media, I just want to laugh. But I think that as much as they have a responsibility, we also have a responsibility to those of us that, you know, claim to be experts or claim to be aware, you know, we should share as much as possible for these guys. Because interestingly, one of the times I wrote about NPR and I just explained it, I saw a post somewhere. Somebody said, NPR has increased. How does that put food on the table? And I set out to answer that question, right? And, you know, it was one of those things that I wrote on LinkedIn that went viral. And somebody actually reached out, an executive from a company, and he was thanking me, actually. This is somebody that maybe is almost old enough to be my dad, just saying that, I'm going to thank you that he's preparing for a board meeting and he needs to go and explain some of these things. And he really liked, you know, the way I just explained it. And I was like, wow. And so, I mean, just to say that we all have that, we have that body of, you know, explaining. But that's, you know, NPR, NPR is monetary policy rates. It is, simply put, is the base lending rate for the economy and is the rate at which CBN lends to other banks. So the whole idea is that everybody will start benchmarking from the NPR. And it determines a lot of things. It determines how much rates we price for bonds, how much rates T-bills are. And it's even, so two ways. It affects when you save money in the bank, your rates are slightly higher. And when you want to get money for loans too, your rates are also higher if it's going up. Same with if it's going down. So the higher the NPR generally, the higher the, how do you say now, the higher the cost of borrowing, generally speaking, in any economy. So maybe we should explain this more concept because I'll talk about it soon.
All right.
There's always a difference between the NPR and the inflation rate, right? So usually what people are going for, they want economies that give them a positive real return on their investments. So what has happened is, if you have an interest rate for an investment, let's say it's 25%, and the inflation of that economy is, say, 30%, the way investors look at it is, I'm earning a negative return because my inflation in the economy is 30, but my investment is only giving me 25.
Yeah.
So my real return is -5, right? Mm-hmm. And it goes the other way too. If inflation was 20, and my investment is 25, my positive return is 25 minus 20, which is real return of +5, right? So, and that in a nutshell is what the CBN is trying to do this year, where, you know, we start with like an inflation of 30%+, and we're coming from under 20 before. And this year, MPR has been increased by about 8% in total over 3 different MPC meetings. But we're still far off. Some people even argue because inflation is still 33%. And MPR is 26.75.
Yeah.
So there's still a negative return, even as we are now. We have a CBN governor that wants to target inflation. That wasn't a policy of the former CBN governor. But this is focused on inflation. So in short, borrowing money is very expensive. So what that means is that everybody will look at what's base lending rates that I get from CBN. I'll start from there. So most banks now are doing 30 to 35%.
I saw a bank of 45%.
Yes, I saw. We got an offer last week of 37 from a bank. Now, what that means is because we give short-term loans for working capital, not for expansion, where people can take money for 3 months, we price our loans per month, right? So our loans are from all the way from 3% per month all the way to 6% per month. And the idea is that We are starting from that 3% because we're analyzing it based on what we are getting from our investors. So we have investors that are saying, look, this is MPR. I'm going to give you the I want to lend money on your platform for 30%, for example. So if we get money for 30%, then that can go on aggregate per annum to somebody that is going to grow it for me 36 or 40 so that we can earn its spread, right? For some people that we perceive as more risky, we'll charge more. But the thing I like to explain to people is that you don't need to take the loan for a long time. So if, for instance, you take 100K, or let me use 1 million, you take 1 million just for a month, and based on your risk assessment, we charge you 4% per month. I mean, what it means is that if you're going to pay back in 30 days, you're only going to pay 1,040,000 naira, which is still fair compared to holding it for the full year, and then you see what the annual rate is, right? Yeah. So it's supposed to be money for like working capital. Oh, I have, I have an LPO. I have these books. I need to supply these books. Let me buy 100. I'll give you your interest of your 40K. I'll make my 10% or my 15% margin. So I also want people to be thinking about it like that. Okay, I have a 45 days thing to close. Having 90 days, and we explain to them, but like, no, I want it for 1 year. Mm-mm. It's not a question of how. This is not the kind of money you take for 1 year or 2 years. This is money of, okay, look, I have 10 laptops to sell. Give me this loan. I'll buy these 10 laptops. I'll quickly sell it. For my margin, I'll have enough margin. Maybe I'll make 20%. I'll give you your 4 or 8%, and I'll keep my money. So that's how you can make money from it. But if you always analyze it, you'll miss it.
I was just thinking about it.
Yeah.
This is an off-the-cuff conversation. Yeah, but then, why do multinationals, especially multinationals, why don't they give upfront cash to contractors and vendors?
Yeah, yeah.
Why do they always... why do they always give them, wait
period.
3 months, well, sometimes 3 months? Because, do you know the funny thing? I had a printer who came to my house yesterday, and the guy was just gisting. And he said he got a gig. The gig was for 2 million. Yeah. For him to be able to supply some things to a multinational. Multinational is like, he gave them quotation, sent an invoice, and for something million. No, 60 something million. But the actual cost of that particular thing was going to be around 40 million.
40, yeah.
So obviously, his margin, some decent 20 million was going to come in. But they said he should go up.
He has to finance it by
himself.
That's
3 months.
Yeah, 3 months.
And this guy went to bank. But the whole issues
are not getting money within the 3 months.
Within the 3 months, and upon then, you know, the insider from the company, you know, Nigeria.
The procurement
manager was asking for his own 10 his own million.
Did they give him a letter of credit?
Letter of credit now. They gave him everything, but he does not have access. He couldn't get access.
How about microfinance?
I'm asking that.
Why do companies?
Why is it that way?
Yeah.
Why do companies do that?
So this is accounting now.
Yes.
Accounting and finance.
Yes. Why do companies? Yeah. So you've consulted for a lot of.
Yeah, yeah. So it's called it's like working capital management. That's just it. So what they are trying to do is like this. You have to think about accounting in terms of payables and receivables. So what do I mean? If you have payables, payable is money that you're supposed to pay to somebody. Receivable is money that you're expecting. Now, for your payables, if you are doing very good, like working capital management, the idea for you is you hold on to it for as long as you can so that you can make money on it. So let me give you an example. If I asked you to supply this, if I want you to supply this book, even if the money is ready today, rather than give you that money, why don't I keep that money in a bank that will be giving me 12 or 15%? Then I will still pay you. I'll still pay you after the 90 days. So I'm trying to maximize the time that I'm going to be playing with that money to be earning money. In fact,
I just heard something now.
The finance person.
I heard politicians and contract.
The finance person, in fact, will be appraised on it. That, look, I was able to negotiate 60 days instead of 40 days. So I gave you guys extra 20 days to make money on that money. So I'm pushing my payable time forward. Now, for my receivables, which is money I'm expecting, I want to collect that one as soon as possible. So it's always if you resume as like the treasury or finance account manager for a company, those two things, if you negotiate longer payable time and shorter wait times for your receivables, you are going to be given a very good appraisal because you are helping the company to keep cash. If I can delay, because some of this money is a lot. If you look at, let's look at this money now. This is 60 million. 60 million now, let's say you can get a bank that will give you 15% on that. That's 90-ish?
Yeah.
Maybe 90K or 900K, sorry, yeah. About. So imagine me delaying that payment, how much I'm making every single day from just holding it. Right. So the company's financial function is trying to maximize how long that they can play with that cash so that they can keep making money on it before they pay you. So what you can then do, again, this is free consulting, but what the smart thing to do is to say, look, guy, pay me earlier. I'll take a discount. Don't give me 60 million. If you pay me earlier, I'll take 55 instead of 60.
Pay me late.
But that's you have to go and do your math. You have to do your math because the mistake a lot of people make. So people are looking at that, or more 5 million. Make I just wait. But you have to go and do the math and check. If I borrow this money, that 5 million versus my interest, which one is better?
Yes, the five million.
I'm just using 5 million.
Yeah,
the negotiation might be 10%.
I get
you have to compare. Okay, if I pay the bank this money versus if I take a discount and ask them to pay me earlier, which one is better? Sometimes. Oh. It's more expensive for you to get it as a loan. That 5 million you didn't want to spend, you end up spending 8 million for a loan that you get, right? So, again, this is just like, small things that businesses do. And I always encourage people, just like you said, look, all these things, when I joined KPMG, I didn't like accounting. I used to, in fact, then I wanted to even do marketing. People don't believe, but because I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. You see, Emmanuel is laughing. I wanted to do marketing because my dream was, okay, work for a bit, which I guess we'll talk about later as well. Work for 5 to 10 years and go and do marketing or sales. I saw myself in an FMCG. I thought I worked for Nestle or one of these companies because that, in my head, is the closest thing to entrepreneurship, marketing and sales, mm-hmm. Right? Marketing, entrepreneurs are always selling stuff. Man, KPMG, what's this accounting, debit and credit? So many... They're stress tossing. I was going to that. But it was a lot of learning to do. But in hindsight, that was one of the best things that happened to me, right? Because coming into business with that accounting knowledge that I actually now like accounting, that I've liked it by force over the years, it's helped really understanding business, going into negotiations, preparing my books, discussing my accountant, my financial people, and just having negotiations and being able to see some things that some people will just take for granted, right? So I would always encourage anybody in business, no matter how little, just more. Try and learn accounting and finance. Just enough to have a conversation, not to become a chartered accountant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, we're going on a quick break. And when we come back, guys, definitely, you know how we do it. We'll take a look at what is happening, what this book is all about. We're also going to talk about accounting for kids. Okay. Because why am I saying this? Just take a look at, let me show you. Can you see that? Can you just see this? Just breaking it down. Franklin Business Podcast. See you when we come. Welcome back. But then, we're having some side talks. I think that side talk should be part of this podcast. You said that you don't like entrepreneurs. You're not always impressed when they say, I have LLPOs from big companies. Yeah. Big companies like those ones you see on the NGX. Those companies that
don't quote me. SWOTs. Our friends, deal.
The companies that with market capitalization of 1 trillion and above.
Yeah.
You know them. Anyways, you said you're not always impressed. Why? Because...
I mean, I'm not impressed. I'm impressed by the size of the invoices.
Okay.
You guys see 100 million naira invoice,
yeah,
which is good. But I'm not as excited as a lot of people expect me to be because I know for the working capital management strategy that those guys will typically implement, they like to hold payments for as long as they can.
Hmm.
It's part of their KPI that they can use that money to trade in T-bills or whatever their treasury team wants to invest in. So they want to hold money as long as they can. Now, obviously, you can't do business without those guys. Those guys are the movers and shakers of the economy. They mm-hmm. have to. We all buy things from them. We buy food, we buy things, we buy, you know, different materials that we consume every day. But if you're going into business with those guys, I think I would just say don't be swayed by the volume of the transaction, by the size. You have to also factor in the length of days and even put maybe double it in your mind. If they say 45 days, maybe you assume it's 90 in some instances, and it will take that long. Some of the big companies actually do very well. They are 45 days. But time and time again, and because in the consulting capacity, I've worked for a lot of them, those guys can owe. And they'll owe you comfortably because they know that how many people are going to give you a 100 million naira job. Like if you don't go, somebody else will come and everybody will rush at the opportunity to do that job. So I think you have the responsibility to figure out your own working capital management strategy because they're not going to do it for you. So things like I said around discounts, there are also some people that will be willing to buy your invoice from you at a discount as well. But something has to give, right? Either you take that big company invoice and go and sell it to somebody that will do invoice discounting, or you ask them to pay you earlier, or you find a financial partner that will always be funding you during that gap so that you're not using your own money. Because you know we're going to pay salaries, there's OPEX, operating expense, by the way.
Yeah.
There are different things.
Loans.
So, yeah, so you need to figure it out. Whether you're going to, or another strategy, if it's a physical thing, say this book, for instance, and somebody is asking you supply, maybe you can also get it from credit from that guy. That's another way.
Mm-hmm.
Or you drop something, or you, and it's why, again, in business, relationship is everything. With the financial partner that will give you money, or with the guys that will give you somebody else for 4 tires, you might not have to use your money. If you have a very good relationship and people know that you're a person of integrity and good character, they know that no, even if you delay payment, they all know that it's because of this company. If this guy has this money, I'm sure he would have paid, right? So they can extend you good credit terms. So you might not even need cash. You might be able to get it directly from the person you're buying it from. Or like I mentioned, you have a very good relationship with a supplier, but everything is around, you know, thinking, planning, and just making sure it's done right. But you need the knowledge because a lot of people don't even know a lot of these options exist.
Yeah.
Frank, our podcast should be paid. No, but before we, yeah. But this high level conversations, but there's something I want to touch on because young people can also get involved with. I'm very cautious about people that are listening to us.
They're
mostly in Omo. I just want to make sure I have a good life.
Yeah.
And they're also like, I'm hustling. I'm looking for where to put my money. Yeah. I was with a call with two of my friends yesterday. They said, I told them, I'm saying this here, anybody that beats me to it, it's fine. I told them I want to bring a brand to Nigeria.
Okay.
It's called True Classic. It's a menswear brand.
Mm-hmm.
they make shirt like this, they make long sleeve shirt, but you rarely see them like a brand in Nigeria. So yeah. I was like, my friend was in the UK, I was like, okay, help me go to their store in the UK and ask them what is the franchise deal like.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see if we can put up a store. Three of us can come in together, form an LLC or anything. Then we just put up a store in one place and start selling from the store using online marketing self. And I was like, it was like, okay, fine, it's a good deal. Somebody like me now will be sourcing for this extra knowledge because I want that little bit of advantage in the market.
Yeah, yeah.
But the young ones in the school don't even know. So what I'm saying is, treasury bills, bond, federal government bonds. This I learned it from Frank.
Yeah,
and he says, guy, why don't you put your money in all this stuff?
Yeah.
Can you explain, before we're now going to the fund you won, can you explain what this means and how it can impact investing culture for young people in Nigeria? Yeah.
Before you explain, you know this thing that you talked about, how big companies, I think politicians, I don't know who learned it from who, whether politicians learned it from big companies or big companies learned it from politicians. They award contract. They can say, okay, they award this road. Let's say they award Third Mainland Bridge. And they say, okay, the contract is like, you know, Nigeria and inflated figures. So let's mention something. $62 trillion. You know how we're doing in this country.
Yeah.
But let's say the contract is in billions. So it's 200 billionaire. Yeah, and they get access to the cash. Contractor don't come. Some politicians would hold on to that particular cash you get. They've negotiated everything with the contractor, but they will hold on to the cash. They will not pay the contractor yet. They can hold on to that cash for 2 months, 3 months, six months, 1 year. That's why you see projects stalling across the length and breadth of Nigeria. Not necessarily because the money don't disappear, passes. Some don't disappear. But actually, some of these guys are holding on to that money. And guess where that money is? It's in T-bills. It's in bonds.
Yeah.
The money is raking in more money.
More money,
And by so, do you know that? Imagine a project for 6 years. Interest rate is like 20%.
Yeah.
How many? For you to double that money, you just need 5 years.
You need 5 years. Yep.
And do you understand me?
Now
so even, project of 200 billion naira in 5 years. We've seen it over time. I've seen projects where they don't commission, but they've not done the project in this country. Yeah. So imagine that project staying as long as 5 years, meaning that you've doubled that money in fixed income.
Yes. You've done that.
Currently now, 26%. All you just need
is 4 years. You need 4 years.
One administration.
In fact, if this is somebody that will give you 30%, you can do it in 3.5 years.
You've doubled that money. And by the time the administration is almost done, you see them 6 months after. Oh, yeah, contractor. Sharp. Come and do this project.
Yeah.
They don't cash out.
So some of them have some of the best minds advising them too. So you just see somebody's technical advisor. You won't know the person. The person just hit him. But a lot of the guys, I mean, apart from greed, obviously, there's the greed factor, which is overriding. But you have some really, really smart people, you know, running a lot of the operations for them. So they get away with things like this. I mean, for the, again, that's what I'm hoping, you know, the Uncle Tunde series can be eventually, where who knows what I'll do next. Maybe accounting with Uncle Tunde or something, or finance with Uncle Tunde and just keep.
I'm expecting a YouTube series, though.
It's coming. Okay.
Amazing.
The thing about it is there are different instruments for investment and liquidity management. The short-term ones are called treasury bills, right? These ones are for short-term liquidity placements. You can have it as little as 90 days. And T-bills are almost as good as cash because you can almost call on them at almost any time. And it just helps people lock your money. Now, before, and which is one thing that technology has helped with, before, these things used to be, they used to be more accessible to bankers, finance people. But there are many apps now that are retailing these things for a lot of people. And, you know, we have a sister company that is an asset management and company that, you know, we just got our SEC license not too long ago. So one of the things we are going to make available is some of these things even through our mobile app. Mm-hmm. So you have T-bills short-term. And it's again, T-bills is almost as good as cash because you can call it at any time and you can put money there. There are also bonds. Bond is long-term debt. They are corporate bonds and they are FG bonds. FG bonds are very safe because it's sovereign. In fact, we even have savings bond that you can buy for as low as 5,000 naira. The government just did a euro bond, which is the foreign one as well. So if you have FX for everybody that's chasing exchange rates, you can invest in that. Those ones are usually long term. But the good thing about them is that they have a good secondary market where you can go and sell it, but you might make or lose money. But yeah, you're basically lending money to the government in quotes for a bond. Same thing goes with a corporate bond too. So the likes of Dangote and Co will do, they can do a corporate bond, which is long term, or they can do what you call a commercial paper. Commercial paper is more short term. It's 270 days, more like midterm. So even Chris Land issued a commercial paper 2 months ago. Right?
I saw that stuff.
Exactly. So as long as you meet the criteria. So what is all these bonds that corporate? Basically, Chris Land's Dangote, they've gone to the market. They've said, look, we want to expand our business. We want to do something, and we need $2 billion. These are our books. And you typically have what they call a rating from a rating company like Augusto or Data Pro. There's a third one. I can't remember the name now. But there's Data Pro and Augusto. So they give you a rating, A, B, whatever. You can see the quality, right? So you have access to a lot of information. You can look at their books. If you're fine with everything that you are seeing in the commercial paper offer, some of those guys gave yields as high as 30%. Yeah. VFD, Chris Land, the yields were very good. And like I mentioned, it's not too long. It's 270 days. That's the maximum tenor for the commercial paper. The bonds can be longer. 5 years and even 10-year bonds. But the good thing about the bond is, for FG bonds, they are sovereign, so they are more or less safe, almost 100% guaranteed. But they have a good secondary market. So even if you don't want to, what do I mean by secondary markets? You can resell it to somebody. You might say that it's 5 years on paper when you buy it, but there are people that are willing to buy it off you.
But again, a discount.
There are people that are willing to buy it off you. You might lose or you might make money depending on the price of the bond and the yield at that time. But I don't want us to go into too much to be overly technical. But broadly speaking, those are some of the options. So you have treasury bills, which are short term. Bonds can be corporate or FG, which are longer term. You have commercial papers that are maximum of 270 days. And these are all the things that people will typically put cash in when it's idle. When they say somebody is a treasury manager, what does it mean? The person is looking at the money in the bank and he's saying, okay, let's diversify our portfolio into these segments. We'll put some in treasury bills because we have a payment to make in 90 days. So this money that we're supposed to pay this guy now, since it's 45 days we've negotiated and treasury bills are short term, we can just put this money in treasury bills. We'll chop that interest for 45 days. We are going to do this project in 365 days. We can put this money in a bond until then. Let's get that higher yield. We can put dollar fund. Dollar current rate for the dollar bond is about 9.75%. Some people are also retailing it on their platforms as well. So we say, oh, we put money here as well. Instead of just leaving my dollar idle or going to buy equity that I'm not too sure, right? I can key into something 9.75%. And the government is paying coupons twice a year. So you get your interest semi-annually, which is twice a year, right? So that 9.75 is spread across the year 2 times. There are a lot of options. Again, I would say that there's a lot of education now. Even if it looks like it's drowning into the in the entertainment education, there are a lot of platforms. There are a lot of us that are sharing online. If you go on Twitter, you can be bombarded. Anytime a new policy comes up, we have plenty that is to do explainer.
Yeah.
Many of us have, write.
But I don't see it.
No.
It depends on what I'm feeding.
So one of the freebies I'm going to give with this book is I'm working with my guys now. We are collating a list of blogs and people that everybody should follow for economic news, simple economic news. So we're compiling all the thought leaders and everywhere people should go to go and get information, right? So I think, Nairametrics does a decent job. There is also ProShare.
Yeah, ProShare.
They do a very good job.
Stairs.
Stairs does it, even if they are paid now. Stairs does it. There might
be paywall.
But now they
I love, this is PR for Stairs. Stairs.
Stairs is fantastic.
Yeah. I love how they break this thing down.
Stairs is fantastic. But like I mentioned, they're not giving us freebie again. Although they give some, if you follow them on social media. So you have Stairs, you have those guys, and you have a lot of individuals on Twitter and LinkedIn that really explain things. Anytime a new policy comes out.
You have the Frankly Business Podcast.
You have the Frankly Business Podcast. You have even the show.
We'll be paid now.
The business.
The business. So there are actually options. So I think we also have again, like responsibility to amplify these things, which is why all these things are like a labor of love, to be honest, because it's not like you're making, even all these guys are shared. It's not, and many of them have day jobs. I have my business that I'm doing, but it's just, okay, let's even share, let people have this information, because people need to be more empowered to be able to, you know, make the right moves in their business.
So let us talk about stocks.
Okay.
You mentioned equities. Now let's talk about stocks. Kenji, when last did you drive through Third Mainland? You just see different ads. You see from Green, you see from, look at
even on YouTube, sir.
It's like,
they're literally, I was on traffic the other day. I was seeing GT stocks.
Yeah.
I was seeing First Bank stocks. I was seeing Fidelity stocks. Yeah. They were hawking it. Yeah. I called the guy, how much between?
Zenit is in the market. Now.
I downed it with some code. but what I'm saying in essence, there's so many, it's like, there's a massive PR, come and buy stocks. And there's always something I do personally. I'm not saying anybody should do it. Once something is popular, you're lit. That's my idea. I swear. You're lit.
You're going against the crowd.
Let me break it down for you.
If you're lit, is that people, when they cash out, they've known about this thing since. So once it gets to the mass, once you're seeing it, just know you're lit. Except you want the Frankly Business Podcast. What is your take about this stock?
I want to show you how stock has scarred me.
Okay.
Yeah, I mentioned it. I know.
My father.
Matthias Shimolo second.
No, there are many people with his stories. I
like my father buy a lot of stocks. I say, I bought this one in your name. I bought it.
My father.
We have owned a company. We own a company.
You own a company.
That's
so. I gotta cash it now.
Yeah.
So we that grew up in the when you go with this, if I don't come again.
but that's the attitude of a lot of people that are looking at the bank stocks now.
Yeah.
And again, you can't blame them.
They even extended it to tell you that
they extended it. Yeah. So I mean, it's always the same advice where people are going into these things for different reasons and with different strategies. So a lot of stocks have actually had peaks and valleys, right? You don't want to be the guy that is going to always buy the dip and stay in the dip.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would always say is do your research, look at the history, and if possible, try and get independent advice. A lot of us millennials, our parents bought in 2005 and 2008 before the, you know, recession then. So a lot of people bought and a lot of people are not happy. So if you read any, most people that are between 40 and let me say 55, 60-ish, many of them invested during that time and many of them are not happy. But during that period, a lot of people still made money from the occasional spikes and, you know, and there are some things that happened. I like the way you said it. So you know that, okay, let me just say this. If you notice that when Otedola buys a stock, there's typically a rally. There's typically a rally. And if you miss that wave,
you're gone.
Yeah, you know, you miss. So there are some people, and if you look at, and there are some times too. There are some times too. Like if you look at January this year, for example, performance was exceptional.
Exceptional.
Yeah.
The NGX was the most performing in
the world. Yes. So somebody will see that performance in January, and it just keys into what he said, where if you are hearing about it with the public, maybe you are late. Let me not say you are always late, but you're late.
You're trying to be politically correct.
So no, but it comes to the same thing that we're talking about. A lot of this information is public, but people are not just reading. It's not hidden. The information, a lot of the information to make a lot of these decisions before it gets on Third Mainland Bridge or anywhere else that is popular, it's actually out there, right? But, you know, somebody says something, I feel bad quoting it, but I can say it's that if you want to hide information from a black man, put in a book. And I'm like,
the guy actually saw the protest. Very the protest. In the north, there was a particular place. They raided the library. They said they took the chairs, took table, took every, took moosties. The person was saying they took everything, but books.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, yeah. So to be honest, and look, maybe we also would meet. I like how you know, you asked about YouTube because teaching also, teaching and sharing of information also needs to evolve. We can't allow only entertainment to move to TikTok and YouTube. The, you know, this podcast.
We need to commercialize.
We need to commercialize, and we need to also adopt different content to different types.
I think we need to like even start creating.
Because you have to start creating.
If you look at what's happening in China, the same TikTok that they show in the US is different from what's shown in China because the algorithm is designed to promote educational content in China, but that in the US is designed to promote entertainment and all that. That's why you see what is happening to the US economy. It's just a matter of time. Yeah. They are literally sitting on a ticking time bomb. Now, who's blowing the whole economy? I'm telling you for real. Because all these guys now, what is in their mind? What they are really motivated by is either the LGBT or some kind of things that doesn't necessarily move the needle of an economy.
Frank, I'll tell you that I am so scared with the way we are going, with the information we consume.
Yeah.
I'm so scared about the next two generation. Homeschool will become a thing.
Yeah, it's already becoming a thing.
You're very correct. See what Elon Musk said about his son.
Yeah.
When he literally said that they literally destroyed his son. And what is he saying? Somebody who's going to take over. That's what he's saying. And you see, that's why you see him promoting the person whose policies who attack them, Trump. But then, let's move to fintech.
Okay.
And
no, the fund. He used to give us the scoop. $100,000 in the bank.
Yes, and you got it from the government.
It's from the
NSIA.
Government.
NSIA is the Nigerian Sovereign Investment Authority.
Yeah.
And Nigerians will be like, who be these ones again? Who be these ones? If you are scrolling and they say an NSA run an ad and they come and get this, you will be like, come off
they don't start.
Come off here. But there are literally some people like you who have taken advantage of it and made a couple of fundings from them. $100,000 in any economy is no small joke. Anywhere. For you to be among the 1% in the world, you need, guess how much? $70,000.
Wow.
1% in the world. So $100,000 puts you comfortably at the 1% in the world.
So we are sitting with the 1%.
The 1%.
Yes, now come on.
Sycamore. I just have to clarify that.
Yeah.
Sycamore's money. I don't have. I don't have the money. Anyways, it's fine. But I think so. You know that the availability for or the announcement for the opportunity was very public. I think I saw it in a random WhatsApp group, or I might have seen it online. I can't even remember the place, but I know that it wasn't hidden at all. And just to give you an idea of how not hidden it was, out of the top 10, 5 of the companies that made the top 10 were owned by my friends. 5 of them, right? We belong to the same business community. Interestingly, I know the founders of the first, second, third companies. This is out of 7,000 because a lot of us, we were like, this thing is happening. Is it real? It's not real. What helped is, okay, fine, we need a person that won last year. Toasting Your Money Africa, Toast Your Life, that's saying they, she won last year. And we asked, is this thing legit? Say, just apply now. What do you have to lose? Worst case, no. Best case, you win.
Mm-hmm.
So might as well try, right? So we applied. Again, we are among 7,000 people that applied. I think we actually applied last year, but we didn't even make it to... I'm not sure we made it to the second round. I'm not sure. I stand to be corrected, but I can't remember how it happened, but I just know that we didn't progress. So this year, we got the email, top 100. So nice. We had a two-week virtual training with the top 100 of us attending. They split us into 10 groups. So we had to, we had to do a project and we built prototypes. We had to come up with a business plan. We had to do like video pitches or the whole thing, 2 weeks. It was very stressful, but we did it. So after that 2 week session, we were shortlisted to top 25. Now top 25 went for a 1 week boot camp again of another round of sessions, classes, more pitching. Top 25 were shortlisted to top 10. And then top 10, you know, we had the pitch at, I think it was at Marriott, I guess. And that's how it happened. And to be honest, like I mentioned, I didn't know anybody at NSIA. What I think, one of the things I think really just helped us and stood us out was the fact of what a lot of people commented about, apart from the quality of the pitch, the fact that we had done, you know, substantial amount of money with very little funds. Because the money we raised were from friends and family. That my friend that came up with the Sycamore name in my class. Mm-hmm. All our family, uncles, aunties that say, okay, you guys are doing business. Yeah, take. And we started, even if we raised some small money from friends and family, we also started very frugally. So if you go online, I wish I brought that picture here, I'd have showed you. There's a popular picture online is in my living room. So the first year we're really in my living room. And it's funny because at the time we started that business, three of us were already experienced professionals, right? I'd already worked in all these places at the time. Onye had worked in Page and Red Money. Mawa had worked in CBN and Leadway. But we still took that very frugal approach. We didn't buy any laptop. We didn't rent any office. And we just put everything back into the operations of the business, right? So there was a lot of sweating of capital that was done, of very, very little capital. To really, how far can we stretch this thing before we started doing office, so we started doing any PR. And then, in fact, I would even argue that at the time I even came in, maybe not understanding a startup fully helped, because it was unheard of not to have revenue or customers. I mean, I read about some startups that raised $10 million and crashed before they had revenue or customers. They just had, you know, I don't know what they had. I read a lot of companies that had that raised money with websites and pitch decks. We started business from day one. I started looking for customers. We had showed reasonable traction before we started getting angel investors for almost a year, right? So we're able to tell that story very well. Story of the frugality in the early, you know, frugality of doing a lot with so little. And then really building business around people and just showing, okay, look, year one, this is what we did. Year two, this is what we did. Three, four. So we showed year-on-year growth throughout, and we showed where we started from. And I think a lot of people were really, really impressed with just what we've been able to do with that.
So we'll be rounding up now.
Okay.
What's wrong with your colleagues? Now, what I mean by colleagues, not in Sycamore now, but in the ecosystem,
yeah.
Earlier this year, I did a report that almost seven companies had raised $70 million in fintech, in the startup ecosystem.
Space, yeah.
Seven of them, and seven of them had gone down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
Co-founders, companies, governance, fraud, or whatnot. What is happening? It looks like it's becoming a trend.
Yeah.
Okay, come in, wear black t-shirts. I need to change myself. Wear black t-shirt, know how to do spray, speak some English, ride big beach deck, stay in Lekki, drive one. You get, talk to
Benz.
Drive Benz, go to investors, raise funds, clean the money, move on. On to the next one. Rinse and repeat. Yeah. What is happening?
Yeah. So, man. Again, I don't think a lot of founders went in with bad intentions. Some did, obviously, but I think some just happened to not get it right. And I think some people also built I think another mistake some people have made or might have made is sort of relying on or expecting that subsequent funding rounds will keep happening. So, you know, I'd mentioned, 2020, 2021, mostly 2021, early 2022, there was a very huge gold rush for fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people expected that even if they don't make revenue, they'll be able to raise in 2023, 2024. Mm-hmm. Now, 2023, the landscape changed. US increased rates. Everybody went to put their money back in the bank. If I'm getting free money, why am I investing in a VC or in a startup? So funding dried up. So a lot of people that had all these 5-year plans where I raised first round in 2021, when he raised the second round in 2023, that second round didn't happen. And you build a business where you're not relying on the cash flow that you're generating day to day. Which is why I said, you know, maybe my background in accounting and finance helped me, because I'm always looking at what are customers giving us every day? That's what we're using to run our business, not the next VC fund round, right? In fact, when we even took VC investment eventually, they've even been the one chasing me to go and raise more money. Because it's hard work.
True.
In fact, I actually respect a lot of people that raise like $5 million. It's a lot of work. And I would have said, I spend more of my time chasing customers than chasing investors. Because if you're chasing investors, a full-time job, you can't do much again. They're going to do meetings. You have to prepare these documents. And it's like you're toasting, babe. It's such a long and difficult process. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, just to come back to your question, I think that a lot of people structure their businesses that way, where they had expected funding to come, which is how it has worked out for a lot of companies in the West, in the US, maybe Europe. But I mean, we're in a different market, not yet that matured. So I think it caught a lot of people off guard. I also think that, so that there's that. So I mean, those ones are genuine. This is how we thought it would go. It didn't work out. And there are some ideas that come before their time as well. Which, I mean, even if you go back to early days, when I think it was, even before they changed it to Jumia, I think it was Kasua or something. Mm. And other people that tried e-commerce back then, it was also very difficult, right? So some ideas came before their time. Co-founder conflicts was there. And something I also would like to advocate for is also the fact that people, I say this so many times, I sound like a broken record, but I would always encourage some sort of experience or entrepreneur apprenticeship, some sort of learning period before diving in, right? No matter how little, because I just feel like there's a certain way you absorb it when you watch other people do it, right? And just see, okay, this is how these people structure their business. Oh, this is how they are doing it.
The boy.
I call myself the billionaire apprentice.
So it's important, right? Because I know how much I learned from everywhere I work, just from observing people. Like, oh, this is how my boss is doing it. When client has not paid on time, this is what they will do. If salaries are being delayed, okay, this is what we can do. And you don't know that you're learning, but you're actually learning. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, going into your subconscious. Also, you know, advocate that to a big extent. But I think, again, we're really just returning to normalcy where businesses will start being built on fundamental. What's your revenue? What's your cash flow? What's your expense? What's your profit? What are main customers, as opposed to just growth for growth's sake? I have 5 million customers. None of them are paying me. So what's the point of the 5 million customers, right?
Your Twitter.
Twitter has been unprofitable for the longest time. Uber has been unprofitable. Amazon was unprofitable for the longest time. But you have to look at the peculiarity of those markets. And you have to look at the business model. Those are listed companies. The founders and owners have already made money from selling shares. So even if the company is unprofitable for the longest time, they've cashed out. Early people in, I think, so I mean, okay, so it's standard, like, it's how some people plan to exit from startups, right? Come in at $1 per share. When the company gets to $50 per share, sell it to somebody, exit. If it's not public, exit at the private secondary, which is how a lot of startup founders, a lot of people don't know, have made money very quietly and just kept quiet. So, you know, which is why maybe to some extent, some people don't mind it failing. Because some startups you are seeing, the founders have already made money selling their shares to other people because they have high valuation, $20 million. Mm-hmm. I was going to share 2% of my shares. I'm going to forget like, you know, $100,000 or $200,000. And the company is not making money, but you have $200,000 in your pocket. So you have to align those incentives and you have to look at peculiarity of the market, because it's one thing for you to say Uber has hardly been profitable since inception. But guess what? People that own Uber have made a lot of money because they've sold their shares, but they've sold some shares from the early days when it was very cheap. Mm. So do you have the opportunity to sell the shares of your own company? Maybe not. Are you a publicly listed company? Most likely not. So again, it's always good to align for context.
Yeah.
Okay, where are we? How are we making money? I can't sell my own shares. I have to go and make money from revenue. I'm going to get finance from bank loan. I'm going to get finance from my friends and family. You have to always adjust for the peculiarity of your own situation.
Mr. Tunde, I want to close it out.
Yes, thank you.
This has been a business masterclass. And yeah. I thank you and I thank Emma for putting it together, because I think, for me, I like speaking from the heart. It's been eye-opening. It's been educative. I wish you could get like the whole of Nigeria watching this, whether you're in the north, you're in the south, you're in the east, you're in the west, because at the end of the day, you pick out something that just educates you more. Yeah. I feel more intelligent than how I step into this building. Yeah. And thank you for coming to sit on our couch. So our final question is, we love guests referring guests.
Okay.
So we love you to refer somebody that you love for us to bring on board to have this powerful conversation with.
No problem. I will get you.
No, you mentioned the person.
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned
the person. You asked the person a question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Who do I recommend? I would nominate my friend, I'm supposed to ask the first question too.
Yes, you ask the person a question.
So question.
When the person comes, there's your answer. Yeah. Oh, okay, okay. I'll nominate my friend, CEO of Drive Me. His name is Damilola. Let me just describe the business a bit before I ask him his question.
Yeah.
I'll ask you your question. Hopefully, you're watching this. So what Drive Me does is they help people get, it's a mobility startup. They help people get access to drivers. The challenge now, if you're in a fleet of companies or even if you have a private car, people find it hard to get reliable drivers, to train them, to make sure that they're coming on time, they're responsible, all that is. I always say I don't know how he does it, because I've been working with him for a few years now, and I feel like what they do is magical. So I guess I'll be very interested in knowing how he manages hundreds of drivers, because some people are going crazy managing one. So I would really love to know how he manages that and how he doesn't go insane in the process. So I will nominate him to come, and I would also extend the private invitation. And he would love to have him.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Babatunde. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kelechi. And thank you, Frank. And thank you for watching. Like, share, comment. I'll see you next episode. Keep watching. Kelechi, what should they keep watching?
The Frankly Business Podcast.
Cheers.